Strike a Chord Podcast, music chit chat with your hosts Valentina Gikowski and Amla Piriakaba. Welcome to the Strike a Chord Podcast, and we're back after a bit of a hiatus, and we've got a bit of a surprise. And the surprise is that I now have a co-host, Amla Piriakarpan.
Hello.
Hi. A pleasure to have you, and good to have another co-host as well. Share the load.
So, oh, thank you. Yeah. Thanks. Happy to share the load.
share the musical load. But Amla has a lot of musical knowledge, a multi-instrumentalist. You were one of my first guests as well, I think, last year on the podcast.
I think I was after Alejandro.
Yeah, I think so. So a lot of musical knowledge. I think between the both of us, we're going to have a bit of fun as well with
Why not, while we're here.
Yeah, all the future episodes of the podcast. Yeah, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, absolute pleasure. All right, first off the rank, improvisation. I want to talk about improvisation on this podcast. So obviously we both have a lot of experience in playing off the bat as well, I think, which is improv. I wanted to have a chat about the approach and why we do improv, what it is, and how we do it. Some people just, it happens for them. Others, it's a bit of a preempted strike, as they call it. But what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on improv?
Oh, my thoughts, gosh. Well, I'm someone who kind of fell into it as I'm classically trained. I didn't know what it was. You don't learn it in classical music. And I ended up learning improv by being put on the spot when I was finding someone for a classical music duo for weddings, and I wanted someone who could read sheet music because that's the world I was from.
Yep.
Anyway, he poached me and said, "I'd like you to be in my band." And then the first thing I said was, "Where's the sheet music?" And then to which he responded with, "Oh, no, it's all improvisation. Just make it up. Do what you want." And that's how I fell into it.
That's the way to do it. They call it baptism by fire, I think, something like that. So here you go, just play.
It was overwhelming. It was quite scary. And, I mean, I wasn't great at it. It took a while.
A lot of people at the gig?
That was a rehearsal. That was my first session with the band, and then he just said, "Start, just improvise, make up what you want."
Yep.
There were I'm used to rules, so I didn't have any rules.
And then
I was just overwhelmed with it all.
Jeez, you brought up rules.
Guidelines and rules.
I remember having a big discussion with my dad, because my dad was a musician, obviously, and he went by those rules. I wanted to break them. And it wasn't a good discussion, that's for sure. He was a traditionalist in chord progressions, and you know, this has to go there, that has to go there, this has to be a minor, that has to be a major. I wanted to break all those rules, and you know, just why? Because when you ask someone why there are rules, and some people can say off the bat because of this, but some people, they don't know. They just play the rules. So it was a bit of a long discussion. So, and ever since then, I think he knew that I'm going down that path. So I think if you can't beat him, join him.
Yeah.
But a lot of good things come out of improv. The way I see it is, you know, your character comes out as an individual, as a musician. And I think it's part of that. It's the starting point to creativity, you know. And you're saying that, you know, you come from a classical background, and your source is the guidelines, right?
Exactly. So your source is the guidelines, scales, and I'm still now trying to break that cycle and just try to not come from anything and just to play and see what happens.
Yeah,
it's quite hard when you're trained in a certain way.
It is, but. Yeah. You can untrain yourself you know. Yeah. Playing with a lot of people, and I think playing within different genres helps you do that. If you're going to play
classical and you're playing part of a quartet or part of a even all to a to symphony or you know symphony orchestra or anything, everything's set. So you go there, you do your job, you're going to, you know, you're going to read what's there, what's charted, you know. The beauty there is that you know what you're playing. But I think the interpretation, even when you're playing from a sheet of music, your interpretation could be different as well, you know. Mm. And would you call that improv? Maybe not.
Maybe,
I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's a good thing that you brought up, because the foundation of music is really, you know, what is in the bar? What is, how many bars there are? How much time do I have to improv? Or how much time do I have to play this music?
Over certain chords.
Certain chords, you know.
How did you get into it?
For me, I started improvising when I was really young, when I was about 5, I think. I just started. My dad was a big advocate of it. He had his guidelines, but he was a big advocate of just get and play, just improvise. Mm. So I sort of, I don't remember how I did it. I just did it. So I think the big influence there was having someone to play and then you improv over what they're playing.
Mm.
So that's, I think that's the big take there. If you're improving on your own, it can be a bit harder.
Mm.
If you've got someone there to play over a set of chords and you're just playing or you're just figuring out what you're going to do, I think that's a bit easier. But for me, improv, the way I improv is when I start playing is it has to sound good to me.
Mm.
If it sounds good to me and I'm playing, I know what I can preempt what I'm going to do. So I know what I'm doing. Others like to play over a scale, like you mentioned before, over arpeggios. I just play, and if I feel that it's sounding good, I'll go into those cadences or whatever it's going to be. And I think the plus there is that if the key changes, if someone changes, well, I'm in this world of my own anyway, so it doesn't really matter. I'm going to give that a crack as well. Yeah. So for me, it's not structured. For me, and I remember having a discussion with an educated person, I'm not going to mention their names, but where they were very structured with the improv. Oh, you know, you have to go over this chord progression, you have to play this scale in this chord. Again, rules and guidelines,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't really agree with.
No, I find it so fascinating that that's what I'd like to get into more, just the pure improv without the guidelines. I can't help but hear, oh, that's an A minor seventh or an A seventh or a G, G9.
Don't put letters to sounds. That's what I recommend. Don't put letters to sounds. Don't put chords to sounds. Don't put chords like and this is how I create music too.
Mm.
I create and I compose my pieces by not sitting down and saying, all right, I'm going to write this out and I'm going to do this, which I can, but I don't. I'm going to do this over this chord progression. No, I sit there and I improvise. Maybe even sometimes I improvise for about 2 days and I come out with maybe 30 seconds of material, right? Mm. But I think that improv is the starting point of what you're going to compose, of your melodies, of what's to come. That's how I see it. And if I don't improv, I don't breathe. Mm. So
it's your life force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's when you hear those little things and you think, oh yeah, it works, but it doesn't. You go back and you start playing more. You start thinking alternatively about things. Maybe if I put this in here or the other thing is that when you've listened to a lot of music in the past and things coming out of your head, and you think, oh, I've heard this before. Maybe I can work on this or I'm going to work on that, you know. But also there comes that where you don't want to take on too much of that stuff, because then you end up playing like whoever it is that you're listening to.
Yes, yes.
You know, so. But I think when you're improvising, and I think the beauty comes when you're improvising with someone else or with other people, because that's when you bounce, oh, maybe this one, oh, you know, especially with different instruments.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, different sounds, different approaches, different, you know, ranges. Like if you improv with a piano, for example, you've got so much, you know,
your range is magnificent. It's like out here, you know. With guitar, again, but how is it with flute? Well, there you go.
Oh, well, like, yeah.
Or violin, because it's a solo instrument. So how would you approach it? Would you maybe use a loop pedal, or maybe you play to a backing or something?
I do both. So I guess before I started with the loops, that's a recent thing of mine. I really feel though my improvisation's taken, become more free from the looper, even though it has got guidelines itself, the looper. I just feel like I can create what I want, and I'm just getting less concerned with what chords, because I'm just doing it on the fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I used to use backing tracks a lot and would just, and right now I'm using iReal Pro, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm quite enjoying that. I just want to learn a bit about the jazz world. Since it's a world I haven't really explored, but like to listen to mostly.
Look, you'll explore it, and you'll probably explore it for the rest of your life, because it's infinite.
Yeah. And that's what I like, that I'm already going, wow, this is really challenging and full on, but really cool at the same time.
Yeah. And that's why it's cool.
Yeah.
Because it's challenging and it's
full exactly.
On.
Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
But get bored.
You saying that you're actually exploring new things and new ways of improvisation, or using different mechanisms.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, sometimes, well, not sometimes. Maybe the majority of the times it helps, because you're a solo instrument, so you got something in the background. You think, oh, okay, this is working. This is not working. This is not working. That's working. I think the downside to that is that it's looping. You haven't got that human thing where the human can actually throw another chord in there or change it.
Exactly. That's the limitation with the looper. And even our friend Tamer, we were jamming once, and he's like, oh, you know, it's sounding really great. He's like, but where's your, you know, like what you said, like you can't, there's a point where you can't expand it. It ends up looping the same chords over and over.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's pretty easy to fall into that.
Mm.
It's not a trap, but it's something that some musicians live by.
Yeah.
And it's good for them, and it works. It works. You go to a live gig, everyone loops, right? Not everyone, but there's a lot of looping around. And it gives you also that loop and those chords. Believe it or not, for me, sometimes you go into a different world. For someone who's listening from the outside, I think they're listening to the same chords and someone soloing. But for you, I think you're going into a different world. You're immersing yourself into something else, because you're bringing out different sounds, different things. And I think that is a good thing, where you're limited, but you're working with what you've got.
Yeah, that's very valid though about what you're saying with the looper. I've noticed that too. And I don't want to just become a loop artist either.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess why I started the looping is that this is selfish of me, but I wanted to make more money.
Out of necessity.
Yeah, one man band. Yeah, don't have to pay the other musicians.
Yeah, of course. Well,
but look, I just enjoy it now. But
look,
yeah.
There's a lot of solo acts out there that do it. And,
and it works for.
Yeah, I do it when I can, you know.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with that.
No, but like you said, it's it can have its limitations, and I don't want to get sucked into that, or trapped rather, because it's an easily trapped into one style or one genre.
Definitely.
And that was me when I started improvising. I was stuck in classical improv, and it wasn't until I heard our first album, I went, wow, that song sounds exactly like that song, and my improv sounds the same on two different instruments.
Hence what I was talking about before, like when you listen to things and you think, oh, shit, that sounds like this or that person, or, you know, sounds really similar to that. And then, and then you know, you talk to your peers and I think, oh, yeah, that sounds like this, that sounds like that. And you think, oh, I should have played something else. But I think that with improv can be intimidating, especially if you're playing with some really good artists, like, and they're jamming and they're going over and look, we're not robots, so we have our days, we have our good days, our bad days. But if you know, and I think it's an old musical cliche where, you know, you play with people that are better than you to get better, but sometimes these people are just they're just
great musicians and you think, shit, what am I going to do? So you put your own stamp on it and you just play to the best of your ability. And, and I think you got to get into a mindset where you're in that world, but you're in your own little world too, because you know what your ability is, and you're going to push yourself and you're going to push these things and you're going to get these little bumps and scratches and microtones here and these things that aren't sounding quite right. But that's the beauty of improv, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes mistakes aren't necessarily the mistakes.
Yeah, that's so true. And I mean, and the best kind of improv, like you said, is the free form one where it's you're just not thinking about it so much. You're just going with the flow. And that does happen with other musicians at times. It's some of the best improv I've done. It has been with other musicians.
I definitely agree with you there. I think the beauty of improv is that you don't know what's to come.
Yeah.
And when people who are not musicians and they're listening to it and they think, oh, you know that thing that you played, you know, then, you know, or that night, you know, you play it again. You think, nah.
You can't play it again.
No, you can't play it again. You
can't recreate that moment.
it's that particular moment, living in that moment. Yeah. And sometimes you want to live and continue in that moment. Sometimes you don't want to relive that moment. but I think, yeah, you need to be in your own little zone, in your own little thing, but being aware of what's happening.
Yeah.
And I think the main thing there is the awareness, because you have to follow what other people – you can't go off on your own tangent.
Yeah, I mean, the musical integrity of the style, I mean, perhaps, you can improvise in so many styles.
Yep.
And I've seen it before where I've gone to a gig and there's been this amazing improviser, but I've started to notice that they've got one way of improvising and it didn't necessarily work in this particular context or style of music.
That's very important. I've seen that as well. It's good that you brought that up.
And that was me too. So
that's been all of us.
Yeah.
That's been all of us.
Yeah.
And this is where you go back into your shell, you know, just when you thought, oh, I'm doing a great job, I'm ripping it, and then you think, and then you realize to yourself,
go and hibernate
and just go back to accompanying.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good thing and a bad thing, because you're getting put in a place where you don't want to be, but you're humbling yourself as well. You're thinking, okay, hang on, I'm doing something that doesn't sound quite right. And if you got the awareness to admit that, that makes you a much better, musician, but person.
Yeah.
If you haven't got that awareness and you're just going off, I don't think it's going to work.
No.
I don't think it's going to work. So, improv, intimidating, beautiful, easy, hard. When you're playing, because you're playing many instruments and many styles. When you're playing, say, I'll give you an example. Yeah. You play with Alejandro and the Mariachi thing.
Yes.
Do you improv with the violin?
You know, that's a very good question. I do. I do at times. Sometimes he'll just – we improvise a lot at a lot of our gigs in terms of – it's not so much improv. He'll start playing a song I don't know.
Okay.
And because he has a huge repertoire of music that I don't have.
And now catch it.
And then I'll have to catch it and I'll listen to it for a bit to hear the vibe, and I'll either, if I'm feeling comfortable, I'll add some spiccato and a little bit of a solo. Otherwise, I'll just do long notes to follow the chordal progression.
Yeah.
There's a bit of that going on. I'll tend to improvise more on the flute. Violin improv is something I'm working on currently.
It's not easy.
No, it's not. And I'm, again, it took me a while with the flute, but now I'm going through the same process with the violin. Yeah. And it's fun. It's very challenging and you don't have the keys there. You have to know. It's almost like I have to hear what I'm doing prior to what. Yeah.
That's
spot on. You got to hear it. Yeah.
That's spot on. Yeah. So spot on. That's what I do.
I thought you might do that when you said you're able to. You've got to know, you've got to feel it.
You've got to feel it.
And anticipate that. Otherwise, you just, I'm not quite there with the violin. I'll end up hitting the wrong note.
But you're aware.
Wrong note. I'm aware of it and you're, it's fun. It. I'm enjoying it. Yeah. I'm enjoying it. Yeah.
So, all right. On the flute, you're a very confident flute player. So
How would you, if someone was to say, all right, I don't know, 2-5-1 progression or whatever, it's going to be nice, simple. What would you do? Like, how would you still preempt of how, before you start your improv, would you know how it sounds, or you just start and then see what's going on?
Probably both.
Okay.
Probably the second one, I'd just start and see how it goes. I might hear a rotation of it and then jump in. But even if I hear a rotation of it, I'll start to create an idea.
Mm.
I'll try and hear what I'm going to do. With the flute as well, I still feel like I'm still very classically inclined. So for me, I mean, we're our own worst critics. I feel that I really want to get out of my patterns of improv that I do. I still throw in a lot of scales, I've noticed. I tend to do diddly do do do. Yeah, so I'd like to break it up a bit and create different.
I hear.
Yeah.
I'm in the same boat. Sometimes you do these runs and you think, nah, I didn't want to do that run, but it's come out now. It's done, it's gone, forget about it.
Muscle memory.
Yeah, and you think, oh. And then there are some improvs where you're going to try and push and it doesn't work out.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't work. Exactly. You think, oh,
you're nearly, like, so close. Yeah.
Yeah, nearly, nearly, but didn't quite get there. And then you get a sort of like look from someone else in the band saying, and thinking, yeah, nearly, same thing. But then you do something where you think that, you know, you think it's not that good, or you think it's not that special. And then, you know, someone in the band really likes it and you think, oh, shit, you know. They sound really good.
Yeah.
But you're thinking, no, it doesn't sound like shit.
This was a gig I did recently. I did an improv.
There you go.
And it was like a country song, like a folky country, not something I normally do. Yeah. And I was just doing some flute singing. I was just feeling a bit cheesy. And then I added some flutter tonguing. Oh. But then the combination of notes I wasn't happy with, like I had an idea and I didn't get the idea. Afterwards, like everyone was just coming up to me, that was amazing. And I went, oh, really? Are you sure? Didn't feel like my best.
Yeah, and you get them. You do like when you don't feel like your best and you're doing improv and you think, oh yeah, I wasn't feeling it, and then someone comes up to you, man, you're ripping it.
Yeah.
And you think, that's just what you said.
Yeah.
Really? It's like, well, I wasn't feeling it. But
then I wonder if it's linked to, because apparently when I listened back, it fit the style of music that was being played. So perhaps it felt more, people were more.
I tend to agree with you there.
Yeah.
It fits in the moment.
Yeah.
Like it can be any genre. So I think if it fits in the moment, and sometimes it depends on how the people are feeling. If the people have had a few and they're feeling a bit happy, you know, it doesn't matter what you play sometimes. They think, oh, yeah, you know. But. It's a big thing. Improv is massive. I remember, like, listening to an interview or watching or listening to an interview from Paco Lucia, my idol, my god.
Yeah.
When he was playing with John McLaughlin and Aldo Meola, and he never improvised before that. Like, he never used to pre. Everything was like set. Everything, his compositions were set. When he started playing with them, they go, all right, well, here's the course, just play. He couldn't play.
Mm.
He was really, really nervous. He was really, he couldn't, like, and these guys, that's what their base is. They're based on improv,
yeah,
you know, shredding improv. And he used to say after every, like, and then he knew, then he learned how to improv, and then he was ripping it. But then he goes, after every show with these guys, my brain hurt. His brain hurt because he had to improvise here, you know. So it's not only your what you're playing, your brain's working overtime on what to play next, on how to play it, on what is it going to sound like before you play it.
Yeah.
So it's a mind thing too.
It's very mind-based.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in saying that, like, I know we've been talking about everything on feel and everything like that, but I think if you want to explore different genres and different patterns of improv, it really helps to know your scales or to learn the modes.
Exactly.
And arpeggios, because that's going to get you started. Like, my son's learning guitar now, I'm teaching him.
Right.
And I want to drill into him improv as well. So I've been showing him some different
modes, and he's doing metal guitar, right?
So
I'm giving him some pentatonics, but some Phrygian modes as well. So, so those things, and I see him. When he wants to do an improv, I say to him, do an improv. He goes into doing Phrygian scale first and sees where he is, and then starts doing things, which is, it's very helpful, and it's a fast track.
Yes,
because not everyone can feel like from the bat. Like I know there's some musicians out there that are just phenomenal. They're just monster musicians, and they just grab the instrument and just. I just feel that I don't know how to read music. They've never been taught. They just grab it and play it.
Yeah.
But not everyone has that ability. So therefore, you need to compensate with something. You need to find your own mechanisms of doing it. And I think knowing both, I think is the best.
Yes, definitely.
Which you're there. I'm there as well. But I think it depends on the genre as well. If you're playing classical music, there's a really, 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 really small buffer where you can do your little improv, I think.
Yeah, there really is. And I wanted to ask you actually, how this is a question for specifically, I guess, classical musicians seem to have. A few people have asked me. If they wanted to start improvising, like say someone who hasn't been exposed to that world before, like what would you do? What would you suggest to them perhaps?
First of all, I need to see how they play. If I see that they're intuitive, and I see that they don't really need to go through modes and they know their modes, they just want to play. I say to them, open up your heart and soul, and just play around with it and see what fits, what doesn't fit. Just enter your own world, enter your own zone for a little bit, and see what comes out. If I see that they're very much inclined on reading music, well then the modes come out. I think that's the only way to open up their souls to that part of playing music. But I think in saying that as well, I think both can learn from each other. So someone who improvs from a structural perspective, like with modes and arpeggios and wants to get that and those techniques, can learn from the person who just goes in there and plays with soul. The person that plays with soul can learn a lot from this person, because then they're not limited in playing just what they're playing. They can hear something else going on. Like, with playing with Tamer, he knows a lot of Eastern modes. So those Eastern sort of hijaz modes and all those things, makams and stuff, they're a totally different kettle of fish. And then you go, all right, so I'm playing this, but I'm playing with a rock guitarist, so I'm going to have to mix this with pentatonics or whatever. So this is where it's infinite. And
yeah,
it really depends on the person. If I was to teach improv to a person, which I have done before, I need to see how they play, and you need to tailor that. You can't just – I find
here
it
you
hard.
Go.
Yeah, here you go. This is a book from 35 years ago on improvisation. Here, read that. It's not going to happen. But in saying that, whatever avenue you take, whether it's the structured avenue or the fill avenue, you need to enter your own world when you're improv, and you need to be aware of what's going on around you as well, because that your world is going to bring out your character in your playing.
Yeah.
And if you're feeling a bit shit that day, your improv is going to be a bit shit. That's what I've noticed with myself anyway. If you're feeling good and you're bursting with this energy and everything's positive, you're going to go out and you're going to rip it. Sometimes you don't feel like it and you think, you know what, I'd rather just accompany someone else improv, you know?
Yeah, we've all experienced that.
But you can't do that because you've got solutions.
But it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah. Well, you do your looping with these solo instruments, and you do some great things
I just use the violin as the accompaniment.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been noticing as well, like I've started teaching a few kids improv and it's helped me with my own improv. I'll start with rhythms. Especially the kids who, like you said, who can't, I guess they haven't got the theory yet, but are scared as well because it's embarrassing for them, or they feel a bit embarrassed or nervous. I'll just get them to improvise on one note.
You know,
just start with an A and go do 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 do. Oh, and I just added more notes there, but But you get the gist.
Yeah. Do you know how hard it is to improv over one chord?
Yeah.
Mate, if you keep going improv over one chord, mate, that's you're well on the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm thinking about doing that actually, just improvising over one chord, yeah, and seeing how many different ideas.
Yeah,
and,
how many that's different, a good idea. Yeah, how many different reflections you can.
I like that.
But kids, I find that kids, I think it's a bit easier with kids.
Well, they haven't been consumed by their musical minds are pure.
Yeah,
they haven't been tainted yet. With
especially
all
the kids that don't really go by guidelines.
Yes.
Those are the ones that, you know, we're going to push you a little bit.
Yeah.
As I did when I was young. But that I think is a good thing because your creativity expands. So when you're improving out of an improv, you can come up with a melody. That melody can become a hook. That hook can become quite popular. Right?
You could earn some money off that too, depending on how popular the hook is.
You can. I know there have been some jingle writers in the past that it's the improv. Oh, it's bang, bang, oh. And the jingle comes out and it's on an ad. And that's the hook. That's it. So I think a lot of things come from improv. If you're to sit down and say, all right, I'm going to actually write out this thing and this, and how the geniuses in the past, like Bach and Strauss and Tchaikovsky and everyone, they used to sit down but they also used to play. So
they used to play and they would hear it.
That's where they start.
Mm.
So they start and also believe it or not, I think influence plays a big part. So if you've seen something during the day or if you've heard something during the day, you think, oh, okay, maybe that. You know, maybe you see something, maybe you see a piece of artwork that inspires you to play something like this or for something for that. That's where the improv starts as well. That's improv. It's not, you're not going to sit down and, oh, I knew this, I'm just going to write it down. Mm. You know, it's after that improv that's when you start to compose. That's when you start to arrange. But that spark, that thing is, you know, it's so, and I've many musicians say, that I've met, like, I don't improv, I just play. Just put something in front of me, I'll play it. And they play it to a T. They're fantastic. They go, but I don't improv. That thing, I don't believe in it. Everyone can improv. Everyone can.
It's there. Yeah.
It's there. You just need your creativity. And as I said, I think it's a bit intimidating at start, and it's intimidating with who you're playing as well. As I said before, if you're playing with some musicians who are just off the bat just playing, and you think, all right, how do I get into this? How do I jump in? Where do I jump in? What am I going to do? And then if you think about it too much, pack up your instrument and go home.
Yeah.
Just don't think about it, as you said before.
Yeah.
Just don't think about it. Just play. You're going to make mistakes.
Yeah, but like you said as well, like depending on the mistake, it can become a part of the improv.
Yeah, exactly. and that's very, very true. I've done mistakes where I think, oh, okay. Not a big percentage, but
yeah.
Done a lot of mistakes where it sounds really crap. But yeah, those little things, you think, oh, okay, maybe, well, guidelines are out the window, definitely, but yeah. It sounds quite good.
Yeah.
But if you're, so another question for you, if you're playing with someone who is a mediocre, great musician, but mediocre at improv, and you need to accompany this person and they're not really hitting those things, how would you approach that?
Oh, so is this someone I know?
No.
Just anyone?
No, just anyone.
Okay.
Like some great musicians, they're great at accompanying, they're great at singing or whatever it is, but then it comes to improv, it's like they're good, but they're not at that level sometimes. So how would you make that into something, I suppose, positive and make it sound like? What would be your approach?
I guess if we were about to perform at a concert and there was literally no time to
that's what I'm talking about on stage.
Okay, on stage, I would change the way I'm accompanying them.
Oh, cool.
I would try and perhaps. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I would just
I'm thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, because if they can't, you know, you want to support them somehow, And if you're doing something that's way out of league with what they're doing, it's like the style of music again, right? You've got to adapt to the style.
So that's the answer I was expecting from you. And that's the same with me as well. You got to change your company to make to accommodate them.
Yeah.
As I said, improvisation can be very intimidating if they're doing pouring their thing out, they're trying and stuff. Some people are not aware.
Yeah.
And they just go on and they just do their stuff and they just play over and overplay and whatever and whatnot. But
a lot of shredding.
Yeah. And even in accompanying, sometimes you got to change your approach of accompanying. But yeah, that's my thought as well. Changing your approach to listening, being aware. If they're not, you know, maybe instead of playing all these 10 chords, I'll reduce it to 5 chords.
Yeah.
Or do a loop for them where they're getting comfortable.
Yeah, you know? And you've done that for me before. And we've done it before in one of the, I think it was Ziria, Bob. I just improvised over the 2 chords rather than the full.
That's right.
Yeah,
but you gotta accommodate. And I've been in this. I've been in both receiving and giving. Sometimes it's hard to improv over like a bunch of chords that you know, but getting that. You know, that thing where you're comfortable and you're maximizing your improv.
Yeah, and just the flow. Sometimes it takes a little while, and if you don't have that time to practice that flow or to
finesse the flow
right before a concert.
Finesse the flow.
Finesse the flow.
I'm going to use that. Finesse the flow. Yeah. I think definitely reduce the chords. Reduce something or add something. Maybe add something. Maybe add maybe just percussion or muting. Don't even have to play chords. Maybe let them, you know, let the finesse flow. You know, and I've done that too. Where I'm just, you know, I'm just hitting. I'm not even hitting notes. I'm just muting, and they're finding themselves. When they find themselves, I can see that they're, you know, bang, and then that's when the magic happens. And they think, oh shit. I'm pretty good improviser.
Yeah.
That's what you got to make. You've got to make the person.
Make everyone feel good.
Yeah, because they're leading, right? Whether it's a person improvising, a singer singing, even someone that's not improvising but is playing a piece that is a leading piece, you got to make them feel comfortable. And if you don't have that capability, you need to learn it. As a musician, if you want to play with other people, you need to make people feel comfortable with what you're accompanying them with. It's no matter what genre.
No, it doesn't matter what genre. You've got to accommodate, and it's part of the ensemble. When you work together as an ensemble, like you said, if someone's leading, that's such a good point.
Yeah,
you need to. I mean, if they're leading, you're not going to shred over the top of what they're doing.
No,
but this still happens. It's people kind of. Again, I've done this in the past where you're so concerned about what you're doing and making yourself sound good, you forget about the rest of the ensemble.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Another thing to the improv is having an improv with an improv. Like you're improvising with someone who's already improvising.
Yeah.
I've done that before too.
Yeah.
And you're treading on eggshells a little bit there. But when it works, it's so good. It can be such a magical place to be. When someone's improvising and you think you can catch them, this is where the caution enters your realm. You think, should I? You know. And a lot of these things happen in rehearsal.
Yes.
You know. So when someone's improvising and you think and you're hitting those harmonies and you're hitting those thirds with them or you're playing something that's complementing, you know, it's an arpeggio or something and you're actually improvising with them. And a lot of magic happens.
Mm.
Whether you do that live or not, I think depends on the moment.
Yeah.
But that can be beauty too.
Those are some cherished moments right there.
And that's next level thing. I think that's the next level stuff as well. I think you've got to really know what you're doing, and you've got to really know how you're improvising, and you have to have improvised a hell of a lot.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I find it depends. I mean, there's so many variables, but also who you're improvising with. If it's someone you haven't improvised with before, perhaps you won't be as connected to you're still getting a feel for their style.
Yep.
And say you've improvised with someone for over a regular period of time, then you're going to feel, I mean, for me, I'll feel automatically feel more comfortable to experiment and to feel more in the flow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But on the opposite side of that, it's challenging as well, not knowing someone and just poking a little bit, just think, oh, okay, you know, how receptive is this person?
Yeah.
You're doing something, you're thinking, and you're pretty confident that it sounds quite good, right? Yeah. But how receptive is this person? They can say, oh, what are you doing? Or they can say, yeah, you know?
Let's flow with that.
And this is, and this is the thing where you were saying, how well do you know this person, right? So if you don't know this person, after that little exercise, you'll know them. That's what I reckon. whether they're going to be receptive of it or not, and whether you're going to have a bit of a discussion after the gig, you know, I think that's going to determine how your relationship is going to go. Like, your relationship with this person starts with an improv on stage. It's like, bang! It's like, oh, all right. This person didn't really like it. Am I going to get along with this person? And improv just ruined this whole relationship. But I think, it's a demanding thing as well. It's intimidating, demanding, and it can be exciting at the same time and beautiful at the same time and a piece of art. So, and I think with playing with other people and some people that I played with in the past, they expect you to improv. They expect to hear your playing.
Yeah.
And then like I know I played with a Latin quartet for many, many years, and I remember one gig, I wasn't having a good day, and they were expecting in this particular song my improv, and I just improv all the time. Chris. I go, Chris, you take it, man. And they're going, what? You're not going to improv? Come on. I go, nah, man, just take it. He wasn't happy. Oh. He wasn't happy. So what did you take to the improv? So people in the band sometimes expect you. And this whole band was based on improv. It was So it's what's expected sometimes of you.
Yeah, it's true.
You know?
Yeah, I would go to this particular bar. Like, I love this place. I won't name it. Yeah. And every time I walk in, a few of them recognize me and would be like, oh, grab your instruments and play a song. But I didn't want to play. I just wanted to
have your days.
Just wanted to sit there and be a, what do you call it?
A guest.
I just wanted to watch.
Yeah.
And it happened a couple of times, and then they noticed that I wasn't bringing my instruments, and then I just stopped asking.
So I think that's another thing. That's an improv as well.
Like
you going to a place, not taking your instrument. Yeah. That's improvisation. it's a big thing. Improv is a big thing. It's massive. It's good.
It's so fascinating.
It's fascinating. It's fantastic. It's great. It can bring you on a high. It can push you down to the bottom. It can do everything. But my main takeaway of improv is that your character's coming out.
Mm.
And the way you play is what you play and how you play it. That's a reflection of yourself.
Yeah. You're creating your own music there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Independent of, everything else.
Everything else.
Yeah.
Your own little world, your own little...
It's your flavour.
It's your flavour.
Yeah.
It's like your DNA.
Yeah.
It's like your thumbprint. This is my improv. This is my improv style. Like,
yeah.
If you know different styles, it's like really good because you can all put yourself in many different bands, many different genres. Like, you know, sometimes I'd be ripping a flamenco solo and stuff, and then I'll put a blues thing in there or something, you know, and okay. The question is, did it fit in or didn't it fit in? And it's just like, and you're asking yourself this question for the whole duration of the gig. Did that fit in? Did it fit in? Didn't it fit in? And then you're playing another song and you think, oh, shit, that didn't fit in. It's like, and that's when you start getting doubts.
Yeah, that was the other day with the three of us, with Tame, we did the memorial and I had the improv. And I also realized when I got home that I mucked up the rhythm. for the do-do-do-do-do-do. Yeah. That's how it was meant to be, but I went, ba-dum, 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 ba-dum.
I just treated it as on the E-ander, E-ander, on the syncopation.
So but I was beating myself up about that for a bit, and I laughed and went, no, this is your inner classical trauma. Like, let go of that. Don't be ridiculous. It was fine.
And that's where the anxiety stems from.
Yeah.
And that's where, oh, shit.
But I had the awareness anyway, and I looked at the flowers we received and went, look, you got some flowers.
You see? and they loved it as well. So, I mean, look, yeah, and this is the thing, the crowd, the general crowd that's listening to you that aren't musicians, they're gonna look at you and they're gonna listen to you, from a the whole band's perspective. If it's a musician in there, they're gonna pinpoint and analyze stuff. and look at things, from a musician's perspective. Oh, they didn't do this.
Or that. Oh, we do that with each other. I mean, whether we want to or not, we have times where we do it.
You know what?
Yeah.
When I was younger, I couldn't listen to any music without analyzing. I couldn't listen to a song without analyzing it, and I couldn't listen.
You couldn't enjoy it.
I couldn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
And now, and even when I used to go and watch people, I think, oh, what's he doing on the bass? What's he doing on the guitar? What's he doing? And it's like the whole show passed. I didn't listen to it. I didn't watch the show. What the hell? And now I'm getting to the point where I'm opposite. Just sit down and enjoy the whole thing.
Just let it wash over you.
Yeah, let it absorb. Let it. And even when I'm listening to things now, because I listen to a lot of many genres, I get into that habit again. I'm like, what's this guy? I'll listen to the bass. I listen to this, the keys, or what's the guitar doing here, or the vocals. And I said to myself, shut up. My brain is like, just listen to the whole package, because you can't, when it's coming to you at that point, you just let it all come to you, not in bits and pieces, Yeah. You don't get the full story. You don't get the journey.
You can't, you're not actually listening to the song, you're listening to the individual player and their own techniques and the critiquing.
Yeah, I know, and the critiquing and think, maybe I'll try this. Oh, what is it doing here? What is it? And then you picture in your head on the fretboard where it is or where it, or it's doing on your fingering, and you picture the song's finished. And you're still thinking about it. There's another song that started.
Don't get me. That's a topic for another
time.
I think
that's a topic for another day. We'll name it the analytical side of music.
Yeah.
And that could be a long podcast.
I do that a lot.
That could be a long episode. And that probably intertwines with the anxiety of music performance.
And then that ties in with
with everything else. But I think that's improv in a nutshell, really.
Improv 101.
101 from
how we feel, from our perspectives.
And what our opinions are, and what our approach is, because as I said before, and when we start, there's no guidelines, no rules. Improv is creativity. Creativity, I think, at its most openness, most vulnerable.
Yeah, most vulnerable, definitely. Yeah.
And if you've got the heart to go in there and just to do it, you're doing more than some musicians, I think.
Yeah, well, you'll be rewarded. Yeah. Especially, I'm going to say, put this out there for classical musicians. I know it's scary, but just do it.
Yeah.
And just start with, long notes and then just experiment, and you'll get to create your own style of music eventually if you keep going with it.
I agree.
It's really fun.
And I think also be comfortable.
Yeah.
Or play with people that you're comfortable with, where the intimidation is really minimized, with people who are not going to be judgmental of what you're playing and how you're playing. Or loop yourself.
Yeah.
Start like that.
Yep, definitely. Single backing tracks on YouTube. That's how I started.
I think that's a really good point, because sometimes you don't have people to rehearse with.
Or you're too shy to rehearse with people. Yeah. And you can just start.
That's right. That's right. Awesome. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Yeah.
Amala, welcome once again to the Strike a Chord podcast. Yay. And I'm really rapt to have you on board as a co-host. Many, many more podcasts to come. Also, do you have any gigs to plug? Upcoming gigs?
Yeah, I have one with the Boite on Sunday the 16th of July. It's a part of the portfolio project.
That's right.
You were part of it last year.
No, I wasn't part of it. I did accompany Stefan.
Yeah,
Stefan,
that's right.
Stefan Lachewski. Yeah, I did accompany him, and I also interviewed some of the portfolio musicians last time.
Yeah, Desmond.
Yeah, there was Desmond. There was Misag as well.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So that was really, really, really good podcast as well. Really good insight, and Bud is a great organization as well. So it's
Sunday, the 16th of July. It's part of the Leaps and Bounds Festival. It starts from 3 p.m. There's 15 of us performing half-an-hour sets across two stages at the Fitzroy Town Hall. I'll just say what time I'm on, but come for everyone else. I'll be in the reading room at around 6:45 p.m. and I'll have a full band, including a harpist mandolin.
Fantastic.
Percussion and the vocalist.
Your resident mandolin player?
Yeah, good old Corey.
Corey's great.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah. Saying the Blight and mentioning the Blight, I do have a gig with the Blight as well. On the 14th of July, I've got the Flamenco Ensemble. Looking forward to it. Get your tickets at the Blight, blight.com.au.
That'd be great.
Yeah, my website as well, valentinoflamenco.com. And
amlamusic.com.
We'll put it up on the we'll put it up as a text on the actual podcast video. So thanks once again, Amla. Thanks for jumping on board with me and sharing the musical load.
Oh, thank you. Sharing's caring.
Finesse the flow. That's it. Catch you guys next time.
See ya.
Strike a Chord Podcast, presented to you by ValentinoFlamenco.com and AmlaMusic.com.